This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, December the 12th, 2014. Hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday, 12th of December, 2014. And as always, Gordon and Liz Clegg edited for us this week. Now, if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And a reminder that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And here's another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick on the box, you might find it more convenient to access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through the website www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Winchester Talking News is all lowercase with no spaces. That address again, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just need to go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording, and they're listed in date order, and click Download. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today, and your readers this week are Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
I should be introducing Claire Porter as usual, but sadly she has a very bad cold and won't be with us. But we'll begin, as usual, with the main headlines, which this week are King Alfred Dig set for collision course. And that will be Robin, please. And can you give us that first headline story?
King Alfred Dig set for collision course. A new dig that could find the bones of King Alfred the Great is moving closer. But researchers are on a collision course with the charity that created the memorial garden that stands above the monarch's grave in Winchester, the Chronicle can reveal. The Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden say they will oppose any excavation at the garden, which opened in 2003. Its chairman, Sue Nelm, said it would mean total destruction of the garden. If it were to be destroyed, it would be irreplaceable. We wouldn't be able to raise enough money to re-establish it. We will oppose this absolutely 100%, she said. The latest development was revealed by City Council Chief Executive Simon Eden, who said he had met university officials and members of Hyde 900, the local history group, that pressed for research into bones found in the grave at St Bartholomew's Church. That sparked renewed interest last year in a dig at the site of Hyde Abbey Garden between 1997 and 1999. Further analysis revealed a bone discovered in the dig dated from Anglo-Saxon times, and so may be Alfred or a near relative. Mr. Eden told the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday, I met the chairman of Hyde 900, Steve Martyr, Professor Martin Biddle, and the university. They are interested in the possibility of further investigations. Mr. Eden acknowledged any further digging would disrupt the garden, which includes the much-loved glass artwork by Tracy Shepherd. Professor Martin Biddle, Professor of Medieval Archaeology at Oxford University, said, I have proposed with Hyde 900 a further excavation of the east end of Hyde Abbey. Everybody thinks we have to look for King Alfred, but we could learn a great deal more about the abbey itself. Professor Biddle added, it has not been properly excavated on an appropriate scale. We might also learn more about the graves, but they may have been totally destroyed. I entirely understand the concerns of the friends of Hyde Abbey Garden. I'm afraid we have caused some concern, but we would not do this without their agreement. Professor Biddle said that agreement would ensure the garden would be restored and even enhanced. The likely high profile of the excavation would mean funding for restoration would not be an issue, he said. Edward Fennell, founder of Hyde 900, but speaking in a personal capacity, said, "I'm convinced the bones are down there still. I don't think anybody would have walked off with them. It's not a Richard III situation where a whole skeleton was found. I think there will be a lot of fragments. This is a site of national significance. There is enormous interest in the story of Alfred the Great." Another idea, said Mr. Eden, was to put in interpretive panels that could be accessed by smartphones, giving, for example, holograms of King Alfred. Hyde 900 has prepared an application for funding of up to £100,000 to the Heritage Lottery Fund to improve public interpretation of the Abbey, which has now largely disappeared after the dissolution of the monasteries in the 1530s by Henry VIII. Mr. Eden said more work needed to be done on the results of the 1997-99 excavation. "We need to complete the analysis of the dig that the council led at the turn of the millennium and have a full write-up of that." But Professor Biddle said he did not think that was necessary, as comprehensive notes were kept at the time.
Redevelopment sparks interest. The redevelopment of another chunk of Winchester city centre is attracting strong commercial interest, civic chiefs heard. The City Council has been contacted by numerous businesses regarding potential work at the cattle market and Carfax in the railway station and Andover Road areas. Council officers want to promote the area as a site for high-spec business premises, including national headquarters for large corporations. A report to the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday said there had been strong interest from within the city and further afield. Council leader Rob Humby last week told the Chronicle that he regularly meets big businesses who want to come to Winchester but can't because the city lacks quality office space. But on Monday, Lib Dem group leader Kelsey Lerney drew attention to a council report that talked about engaging with stakeholders in the area. "We talk about stakeholders, but not people. People feel they do not get an opportunity to have their say, that it is only a select few that do." Councillor Humby said the consultation would start with the stakeholders, primarily landowners, but it would move out to include members of the wider public. Both schemes are in their infancy as the council is still producing a development strategy. But concerns over the future of the cattle market area was one of the drivers for people taking part in the Winchester March on November the 29th. The council is suggesting that the cattle market car park can be replaced by offices or homes, with drivers diverted to a proposed multi-story on Gladstone Street. The meeting heard that £29 million has been suggested as the money needed to develop the Carfax site near the station. Other possible uses include housing and offices. Developing the cattle market would cost around £10 million, according to a council report. Alexis Garlick, Chief Finance Officer, said some of the development costs at Carfax would be financed by the selling of developers' rights to create an immediate income. Chief Executive Simon Eden stressed that no decision has been taken on either scheme. The figures are the potential sums should the schemes go ahead. It is worth reiterating, there are a series of discussions with stakeholders and public engagement before we decide on that site, said Mr. Eden. Both the Carfax and cattle market schemes would have produced income for the council. By 2021, the respective figures would be £780,000 and £1.23 million.
And the third headline story is Key Decision Due on Silver Hill. A landmark decision for the future of Winchester City Centre is due to be taken today, today being Thursday the 16th when this paper was published. City planners will decide on changes to the £165 million Silver Hill scheme for shops and houses at a special meeting this morning. The planning committee, which is going ahead despite the council facing a High Court hearing over the scheme, will hear from developer Henderson and campaigners on both sides. City officers will present all four amended planning applications and take questions from planning committee members before a public session. The final list of speakers was being finalised as the Chronicle went to press today, but it is thought to include campaigners Councillor Kim Gottlieb and former City Councillor Karen Barrett. Objectors will be given 30 minutes to make their case, with a limit of 3 minutes per person, with 15 minutes given to supporters and another 15 to developer Henderson. The planning committee will then debate and determine the planning application. Controversially, it has been amended to drop affordable housing and a bus station. And those were the headlines for this week. And we're going to read you the death notices now. And it begins with Edwards, Phyllis May, née Montague Edwards, peacefully at West Acres on the 29th of November, age 97.
Baskwell, Joy Francis Baskwell, on the 6th of December, peacefully at home, aged 89.
Culhane, James Joseph Jim Culhane, on 28th of November, aged 84.
Hayden, Alex Hayden, suddenly at home, on 25th of November, aged 60.
Hine, Eric Hine, on the 26th of November.
Ireland, Reginald John Ireland of Winchester, at peace, passed away on 4th of December, aged 86.
Morris, John Graham Patrick Morris, peacefully on the 1st of December, aged 58 after a long illness.
Piers, Belinda Piers, suddenly at home on the 1st of December.
Pike, Anthony Philip Tony Pike, passed away peacefully, aged 84, on 5th of December.
Wakeman, Howard Aubrey Wakeman, at home on the 3rd of December.
Wilson, Anthony Tony Wilson, peacefully at home on the 5th of December, aged 77.
Christian comment this week comes from Rowley Ream, and he's headed his item, How Deep Can a Story Go? Standing at the 9/11 memorial in New York last week, I wondered how deep a story can go. In this case, the story of nearly 3,000 American lives lost to terrorist attack. Some took the opportunity for pictures, saying their cheeses in various languages in front of one of the city's tourist attractions. Perhaps this was just a first small step into the story. Others were reading the names of those who perished, commemorated around the edge of each memorial. Many ended up staring down into the abyss where each tower had once stood, curtains of falling water falling into the pool below, then falling again into a deeper, darker hollow, into nothingness. Looking down, who could fail to remember those who had jumped to their deaths rather than die by smoke or fire? The rushing water expressed the violence of their end, but also the grace of ordinary people who, having said their goodbyes, laid down their life. The great thing about the memorial is that it doesn't offer easy hope. The water falls away into nothingness. Those people really died. What next, we simply cannot see. Some may dare to believe that underneath are the everlasting arms. Other may believe, with a different daring, that death is the end even for those we love. We seem to lack good evidence. However, at Christmas, evidence comes in the form of another story, again with different levels of meaning. There's the tinsel and turkey level, right the way down to mystery. How can anything be made better by the birth of one child in a stable unless God has poured the depths of his love into that event, poured his life out like water into something as small and helpless as a child? The Christmas story is something to set alongside the stories we know all too well, where death seems to have the last and loudest word. Christmas can't drown our sorrows, but can flood our hearts with hope. Infinite love is born into a world where the innocent still suffer. As the carol has it, yet with the woes of sin and strife, the world has suffered long. Beneath the angel strain have rolled 2,000 years of wrong, and men at war with man hears not the loving song which they bring. Oh, hush the noise, ye men of strife, and hear the angels sing. And that was from, as I said, Rowley Ream. Right, from a big mailbag this week, we've selected 12 letters. And as last time and the time before, you'll hear that the focus is on Silver Hill development and that march of protest in Winchester on the 21st of December. Robin, please, will you start us off with her first letter?
What use is this councillor to city? When the leader of the city council is content to say week after week, stone-faced like an automaton, our consultation processes are not flawed, we listen and respond, and both assertions are demonstrably untrue, what use is he to the people of Winchester? What is he for? When Councillor Tate is allegedly capable of this jaw-dropping inanity, the demonstration was entirely negative. What use is he to the people? What is he for? Never a word, never a justificatory argument or figure is shared in the manner of consultation or debate with the public. Blank dismissal, as though dissent were a gnatbite on the monolith of power, is their strategy. Might these people not be better employed in the boardrooms of fat corporations, where their sense of God-given authority could be enjoyed with a slightly easier conscience? And as for the rest of our councillors, with a few honourable exceptions, do they not run around like clockwork mice, repeating, "Believe what we tell you, Winchester needs what Henderson wants"? Did they ask? Time again, perhaps, to clean these Augean stables, and one might wish the debris sifted for some pretty distasteful toxins. M. Bidwell, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Next letter comes from Councillor Rob Humby himself, leader of Winchester City Council, and he takes the opportunity of print in the Chronicle to restate what he has said before in person. As the Chronicle reported last week, the Winchester March saw several hundred people marching through Winchester. They were protesting that the council pays only lip service to consultation and calling for a wider debate on a vision for the city. I am the first to support public protest as a legitimate part of the democratic process. However, the accusations levelled at the council are not borne out by reality. Winchester's cross-party town forum consulted extensively on a five-year vision for Winchester. That sets out a clear, inspiring vision for the place we want our historic city to be. We also have an equally exciting vision for the whole district in our local plan. Preparing that involved a wide consultation with many hundreds of people from across the district. The council was praised for the quality of that consultation with a national award. The latest stage of consultation on part two of that plan has also involved many parishes, other local organisations, and members of the public. We also have a good track record on many major projects. Silver Hill has been the subject of many years of discussion and debate, including several public meetings and exhibitions, along with the scrutiny that comes with two planning applications. There has been extensive local discussion about extra care housing at Chesil, and initial reports on the station approach have all been put in the public domain and shared with stakeholders. The future of River Park Leisure Centre has been the subject of public meetings and open debate and has been discussed with many sports clubs, governing bodies of sports and Sport England. We can be equally proud of many other examples of community engagement across the district. We can, of course, always do better. It must be true that much that is proposed in a place like Winchester will be controversial, and it would be rare to see consensus on all we do. But no one can argue they have not been given an opportunity to contribute. The council is elected to lead, and I believe does so in an inclusive and democratic way. Councillor Rob Humby, leader, Winchester City Council.
And of course it doesn't end there. Bill Hoad, Worthy Lane, Winchester, heads his letter, Consultations Failed the Public. Sir, Rob, I'm your chum, you can call me Rob Humby, stated in the Chronicle on December the 4th that there was never a case that we were going to build right across the cricket pitch. Perhaps Rob should pay more attention to his own published work, Option 2 of the City Council's exhibition in both the existing Leisure Centre and the Guildhall in late 2013, contained the words, "Loss of some recreational open space, exact amount to be determined." Later consultations failed to establish the full extent of this loss. Rob took over from Keith, and Keith's plan was most definitely to grab a large strip right across the cricket pitch, which should have meant that the surviving portion could no longer retain the appellation cricket pitch. If there was never a case that we were going to build right across the cricket pitch, why then did a large group of concerned citizens consult and consequently campaign together to stop it? Why, if there is such easy consultation with the City Council, was it deemed necessary for a group of over 1,000 citizens of Winchester to march through the streets to protest against developments planned by them? And that was Bill Hoad of Worthy Lane, Winchester.
This letter is from Jeff Bruty of Manningford Close, Winchester, with the title Little Hope It Has Influenced Council. I was one of the large number of people who marched through Winchester to protest against the City Council's handling of the Silver Hill development, but I am sorry to say that I have little hope that our demonstration will have a great deal of influence with the Council. The response to this display of public indignation was a statement from the leader, Rob Humby, whose attitude seemed to mirror that of Andrew Mitchell and David Mellor. In effect, he said, "I know best, and if anybody disagrees with me, their opinion is worthless." Not in those words, and without the colourful expletives of Messrs. Mitchell and Mellor, but the message was similar. The circumstances were the same with the debate on Barton Farm and the redirection of Andover Road. Local opinion was ignored, objections overruled, the city planners got their way, and the council voted it in. Now, in the aftermath of the Scottish independence referendum, there is a proposal to devolve more power from Westminster to local authorities, but we should view this with some suspicion. At least our MPs are, in theory, full-time, are recompensed as such, and are required, again in theory, to live in the constituency they represent. I would be very uneasy about either Winchester Council or Hampshire County Council having more power. An even worse scenario would be to have another layer of government with more elections and more bureaucracy. Is it not time for a change in our electoral system so that we could completely change the whole council at one time? Maybe then they would be more responsive to public opinion. Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
This letter from Adrian Hicks is headed A Vote of No Confidence in Council. Having attended the Save Our City march on Saturday, November the 29th, Anyone who was in the city centre after the march had dispersed at 12:30 p.m. would have a clear impression of the chaos the city is heading towards under this council. A council that is hell-bent on turning our beautiful city into a building site from end to end, with developments everywhere. The sheer scale at Barton Farm and the housing at Pitt being built as we speak. The traffic chaos we are experiencing now will be an everyday norm. Our city will implode. I also note this bunch of cretinous councillors are now taking it out on the council tenants by stopping the 4 rent-free weeks and increasing rent charges by 2.2%. How many people is this going to make homeless? Quite frankly, there needs to be a vote of no confidence in this council and the elected councillors. Personally, I'd like to see them all on the Abbey Garden railings. Adrian Hicks, Granville Place, Winchester.
One positive comment in amongst all of this. It's from Tim Bittleston, headed, "Councillor Gottlieb has fought our corner." Sir, I think we are well overdue a collective thank you to our tireless councillor, Kim Gottlieb, and his wife, Nikki, for that matter. Kim has been campaigning hard on our behalf to improve Silver Hill Project and is the powerhouse behind the Winchester Deserves Better campaign. Being a councillor is a thankless task, and too often a position taken by people inadequately experienced to occupy such positions. Kim and his wife have proved themselves to be well qualified and motivated to improve our lives. I also suspect this ardent couple have been funding much of this campaign out of their own pockets. And that was from Tim Bittleston, Abbots Worthy.
And another letter from Clifton Road in Winchester, this by Liz Kessler, and with the title, "Winchester Needs an Effective Voice." The Winchester Deserves Better march demonstrated resoundingly that large numbers of Winchester's citizens recognise the need for change in Winchester, but want to see any changes enhance the special character of the town. Silver Hill is one of the many sites stroke areas awaiting development. Barton Farm is underway and the station approach area is being discussed. But Winchester has a serious democratic deficit. Planning decisions are made by the Planning Development Control Committee, the great majority of whose members do not live in the urban area of Winchester. The Winchester that is seen by those who live in the surrounding villages and small towns and who come by car is different from the experience of those who live in the town itself. This disjuncture puts a greater onus on planning staff who are handling a large number of major developments while facing cuts and changes. They are under stress and lack the time and resources to work effectively with developers who are very persuasive in pushing for what they want. What is needed is an effective voice for Winchester. A town council for Winchester and effective public engagement to ensure that the vision for the city as a whole can influence development. Let us hope that the march is the beginning of much needed change. Liz Kessler, Clifton Road, Winchester.
And on a totally different subject to planning and all that that entails, we have a letter from John Miller, remembering P.D. James. I think many of your readers will have been saddened, as I was, to hear of the death of P.D. James. She always drew large and appreciative audiences whenever she came to speak over the years, most recently this year for one of the Winchester Dialogues. She was a great lady, as well as a great writer, with a wicked sense of humour. I found her to be a wonderful interviewee, but she also demonstrated that she could turn the tables as a guest editor of the BBC Today programme when she interviewed the then Director General, Mark Thompson. Her courteous, but deadly, questioning left him spluttering for answers, and all my broadcasting colleagues were lost in admiration of her skill. She will be much missed, but we should all be grateful to have heard her so often in the flesh in Winchester. John Miller, The Old Vicarage, Bishop Sutton.
And a letter here from Brian Woodruff, who many of you will know as being a reader on the Talking Newspapers teams. He wrote to the Hampshire Chronicle on the subject of the hospital staff. It headed, "Staff were a credit to medical services." Sir, we hear and read so much criticism of health services these days that it gives me great pleasure to say that in my recent hospitalisation and operation in Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the Nuffield Hospitals under Mr. T. Moore and his team, I received nothing but kindness and efficiency, together with an expertise that led to a successful outcome to the operation. My grateful thanks to everyone concerned. They were all, without exception, a credit to our local medical services. And again, that was Brian Woodruff of Sunnydown Road, Winchester. And I'm pleased to say he continues to make a very good recovery.
And another letter, this one from Rupert Pitt, is also hospital related and is headed, "Hospitals Don't Need Fast Food." I recently had to go to Southampton General Hospital and was surprised that there is a Burger King on Level C. How disappointing that this restaurant serving fast food is in a British hospital. The garish lighting and food stands in contradiction to the standards of disinterested service the NHS provides. Hospitals don't need this. Read Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser. That will give you a full history of fast food and McDonald's. Jasper Carrot, the comedian, once said, "Fast food is everywhere, usually just after you've eaten it." Rupert Pitt, Stony Lane, Winchester. And there is actually an editor's comment at the end of the letter which says, "Coincidentally, the Chronicle has learned that health chiefs will not be renewing Burger King's lease on the unit at Southampton General."
And I want to thank everyone for reading those letters. But it seems, doesn't it, that the Silver Hill story is just going to run and run. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write a letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, we're including question and answer this week, and the questions were asked of Ron Burgess, who made a name for himself by dancing solo in the High Street, Winchester. And I'm going to ask questions of Ron, who today, if you will please, Robin, be Ronald Burgess. Ronald Burgess, by the way, is 87, but he was retired and recently famous, as I've said, for dancing in the High Street. Ronald, what's your favourite restaurant or cafe?
McDonald's. You get what you want and what you need. It's one of the oldest places here. I love it.
And your favourite pub or bar?
I don't drink. I used to go to clubs, though. My favourite was the one in Worthy Road.
And your favourite shop?
It was Hancock's Hardware Shop on Jury Street, where I used to be the driver. We had a great staff and really got on with selling everything.
Do you have a favourite view?
Up St Giles's Hill. You can go up there and look down the place. When we were kids, we used to go down there on the sledge.
Favourite building?
Well, I suppose it's the cathedral. Or St John's, where they look after all the old people.
And who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?
I don't think Winchester has an icon. You see the mayor's, but you don't see who's running the Guildhall.
And what's Winchester's best-kept secret?
The music. People walk and they don't even walk round the back. They don't stop and listen. Maybe when I do my dancing, I stop one or two.
What's the best thing about Winchester?
It's somewhere quiet. Nothing bad happens to it. We don't get these fights like other places. And it's a short distance from everywhere, which is handy.
And the worst?
I don't like that they've got these bikes and they leave them up against the windows.
If there was one thing you could change about the city, what would it be?
I would put all the stalls in a car park somewhere so people can move around on the high street.
So describe Winchester in a sentence.
Winchester is very, very good. It's better than Southampton, but I don't know if it's going to be very good when I'm gone.
Thank you, Robin. And staying with the views of local people of Winchester, it's Your Say this week, which asks people's opinion on the appropriate age to give children alcohol. Thanks, Jerry.
And Heather Lewington, 51, a health support worker of Round Huts Rise, Winchester, said, 16. They're so much more mature these days. Like in France, the children are brought up with it at mealtimes. But I'd rather give my child a drink at Christmas time. Simon Reinhardt, 22, a Hare Krishna monk who preaches meditation in the high street, said, Never. If they got it from their parents, then they have a free card to drink as much as they want. Parents should be very, very careful. Alcohol is an intoxicating drug. I'm against it. Terry Medway, 72, retired, of the Fulling Mill, Alsford, said, I don't approve of giving them alcohol at all until they're maybe 15. A glass of wine, I suppose. They're going to do it anyway. It's what teenage kids do. And finally, Sue Jones, 59, another healthcare assistant of Ploughway Badger Farms, said, 18. People try it anyway. We all went to the pub when we were 16 or 17. But I wouldn't want to encourage drinking or smoking myself.
And the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment this week is headed, Guarantee the gardens will be safe. It's an unusual dispute. Charities that run public gardens do not usually take up arms against archaeologists. But that is what is set to happen in Winchester over Hyde Abbey Garden, the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great. Researchers are understandably keen to explore the site to see if the remains of Alfred, the founder of England, his wife Aldwitha, and son Edward the Elder may still be there. But the Friends of Hyde Abbey Gardens correctly fears the work will wreck the garden, destroying the holly trees and likely forcing the removal of the Tracy Shepherd glass engraving. Professor Martin Biddle is keen to investigate the area and find out more about Hyde Abbey. It's one of the most important historic sites in the country, even if it is unfortunate in its setting by the car park of the River Park Leisure Centre. But any work must include cast iron guarantees that the garden will later be restored and even enhanced. The unique garden, designed by eminent landscape architect Kim Wilkie, was created following a £100,000 public appeal and was Winchester's official project to mark the Queen's Golden Jubilee. To not place its preservation at the very forefront of people's minds would be a gross breach of trust. And Robin is going to read First Person this week, which is contributed by Andrew Napier. Andrew is the chief reporter on the Chronicle and the Daily Echo. Thank you, Robin.
And this has the title, Could This Be the Start of London-Based Winchester's Businesses? Sorry, London-Based Businesses Relocating to Winchester. Winchester is on the cusp of facing one of the biggest changes in its history. No, I'm not talking about the Silver Hill Renaissance, which goes before the Planning Committee today. That will be considered small beer once the full impact of what is coming has been grasped. I'm referring to the development in the next 3 to 5 years of the station approach, also known as the Carfax area, and the cattle market. They are both very big, multi-million pound schemes, still very much on the drawing board, that would transform the area of Hyde Vale, as Winchester Business Improvement District dubbed it. But their importance lies not so much in their bricks, mortar, zinc and eco-cladding, but in the mindset of the City Council which promotes them. Council officers are open about trying to attract corporate headquarters or high-spec business premises. It would be seen as a logical progression. After all, Londoners have been relocating in large numbers to Winchester for decades. Could we now see London-based big business wanting to do the same? The name Winchester has a certain cachet, and the capital is only 55 minutes away by train. If the glossy new offices near the railway station are snapped up, the city could be on a tipping point. There will be mounting, perhaps irresistible, pressure on the edges of Winchester. Bushfield Camp and the Compton Gap springs immediately to mind. How soon before Barton Farm 2, the land north of Wellhouse Lane, enters Stage North? Winchester has until now never been a major commercial centre. Its importance was built on the historic foundations in Roman times, routes that stretch into the 21st century as a centre of justice, education, the army and local government. The question is, would such a change be a bad thing? The 1,114 people on the November 29th march would obviously say yes. Most of the marchers, and I would wager that the vast majority have moved to the city as adults, want to keep their Winchester exactly as it is. But the history of Winchester is one of constant change. It is a place that has grown and declined. How many people have wondered why Staple Gardens in the middle of the city has so bucolic a name? It's because at some point the city had shrunk in population to such an extent that it was full of orchards and hop gardens. Many people on the march are guilty of double think, as they themselves live in homes that was countryside only a generation or two ago. Was Winchester ruined by the building of Hyde and Fulflood, Wick and Hairstock? Was Winchester wrecked by the coming of the railway? By the building of that gigantic foreign modernist monstrosity, the cathedral, to Anglo-Saxon eyes? No.
And now we come to Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. There are two items this week from Belgarum. The first is Alison rolls out the barrel organ for church fair. Shoppers in Jury Street were perplexed by the jovial tunes booming out of the United Church one Saturday. Belgarum poked its head around the door to discover that the music was coming from an ornate barrel organ set up in an attempt to lure passers-by into the church's Christmas fair. Alison Biden, president of the Musical Box Society of Great Britain, lives in St Giles Hill and was more than happy to give shoppers a taste of the continent with a few turns of the 130-year-old German box. "I was asked if I would come along to give a bit of atmosphere," she said. "A lot of people here, particularly the old ones, come and start dancing with their walking sticks. It's really quite fun." And there is a photograph of Alison playing this magnificent-looking purple and gilt barrel organ. And the second item from Belgarum, I'm sorry, but you really need to see the picture. The heading is, "Has all L broken loose at this Stanmore Church?" And you should know that there is a photograph of the entrance to the Stanmore Church, which is normally, I think, called Level 10, but it's lost its first L. So you can work it out for yourself. "Dark clouds over Stanmore this Christmas after a church on the estate was given an ominous name change. Level 10 Church was rebranded Evel 10, presumably inadvertently, after a letter fell from a sign on the building's front. Belgarum wonders if this is an omen for controversial redevelopment on the neighbouring New Queen's Head site, or perhaps an unlikely intervention in Westminster's English Votes for English Laws, EVEL, debate. Either way, it's just as well the sign has since been fixed. It seemed all L had broken loose."
And that surely is alternative news. And we're on to historical items now. I'm going to start off with 200 years ago, and it's December the 12th, 1814. This first item is headed, "Coach Robbery, Not a Success." On Friday, the Newbury coach on its way to London was robbed by three parcels directed to bankers in London, containing notes and bills. There was no violence used to the lock, and three parcels resembling those and directed in the same way were found at the inn in the usual place, which were taken to the bankers as directed. And thus the robbery was discovered, as the parcels only contained rubbish. The robbery is supposed to have been committed by four men, passengers by the coach, three of whom remained in the coach during breakfast. Late on Friday night, as Mr. Pierce of Greek Street, Soho, was returning home through Broad Court, Bow Street, Covent Garden, he was attacked by two strong, tall, powerful women. Or men in women's clothes, who hustled and knocked him down, robbed him of his watch, chain and seals. He called for the watchman and assistance, but before any came, the robbers got clear off. On Wednesday evening, as the Earl of Warwick was travelling in a carriage on the Western Road near London, his trunk, containing wearing apparel of value, was cut from the carriage between Turnham Green and Hounslow. And Jerry, with 100 years, please.
December the 12th, 1914. Sir, in the present congested condition of our streets, it seems desirable to remind foot passengers that the well-established rule for them is to keep to the right on the pavements, so as to pass those they meet left hand to left hand. If all, whether civilians or soldiers, would bear this rule in mind, locomotion would be easier, and those with business to transact would find less needless impediment. The second item from this date: a public presentation by the townspeople of Alsford to their rector, the Reverend A.A. Headley, and Mrs. Headley, on the occasion of their impending departure from Alsford, was made on Wednesday evening at a well-attended gathering held at Perrin's Grammar School. We've already referred in our columns to the work of the rector during the 25 years that he's had spiritual charge of the parish, and proof, if it were needed, of the great esteem in which he's held, as also regret at his departure, was abundantly forthcoming at Wednesday's meeting.
50 years ago, there are two items, and the date is December the 12th, 1964. The first is headed Annual Dinner in Titchfield. Outside, the rain poured down, but inside the beautifully decorated TA Centre at Titchfield, it was apple blossom time, and for the 170 old age pensioners, all over 70 and living in the village, there had been a special taxi service laid on to take them to the hall. For this was the annual dinner given by the Titchfield Bonfire Boys Society on Wednesday. The tables were transformed by flowering plants, which were afterwards given to the lucky number guests, and after a meal of hot turkey, ham, vegetables, mince pies, trifle, biscuits and cheese, all served by the committee wives. The second item: every year in early December, all departments of the Sunday School of the Baptist Church in Winchester, joined by the Christian Endeavour Societies, hold a toy and carol service. Used toys in good condition are required for distribution at Christmas to less fortunate children living in a poor area of East London, and the response of the Winchester children to this need is always inspiring to see.
25 years ago, December the 15th, 1989. Spirit of Christmas comes back to life. The most striking aspect of Bishop's Waltham's Christmas Fair was the family spirit and goodwill working among the community as shoppers and shopkeepers started making the old spirit of Christmas come back to life. Thanks to a very strong police presence, a more tranquil atmosphere reigned over the event, as the rowdy youth element was contained. Christmas fairs had been spoilt on previous occasions by indiscriminate squirting of foam among the crowds. And a second item: a little Welsh mountain mare, Kingsmead Evita, bred and owned by Mrs. Joe Curtis of the Kingsmead Stud, Wickham, has beaten entrants from all over Great Britain to become the first ever Welsh Mountain Pony to win the Show Pony and Cob Society's Performance Awards, held annually for the last 18 years. Broken in by 12-year-old Carla Salmon in the autumn of 1988, Evita had a very successful year ridden by Carla and shown in hand by Sam Curtis, winning 15 championships and many first prizes, including wins at Bishop's Waltham, Alsford and Romsey.
And we have Westminster Diary, which this week is by George Hollingbury, MP for Meon Valley. Robin, please.
These are dangerous times for Britain, with terrorism both homegrown and from abroad threatening our way of life. You may think me alarmist for making such a statement, but in my work at the Home Office, I see this threat every day, and I back the Home Secretary, Theresa May, in her efforts to try and keep us all safe. Now, there are always concerns about more and more legislation designed to protect us, rarely just ending up taking away our hard-fought fight for liberties. Talk of the thin end of the wedge for our freedom is ever present in the media and on the doorstep, and rightly so. I share some of those fears, and I understand there has to be a balance. But there are hundreds of people from the UK who have travelled to Syria and Iraq to wage jihad, and many more being radicalised in this country, and that has really increased the threat level. A fear of lone wolf attacks from returning jihadists and a desire to stop radicalisation and the travelling of British nationals to the Middle East is behind the Home Secretary's recent counter-terrorism and security bill. The bill, among many other things, wants to strengthen powers to place temporary restrictions on travel where a person is suspected of involvement in terrorism. It also wants to enhance existing investigation powers to better monitor and control the actions of those in the UK who pose a threat. Improving law enforcement agencies' ability to investigate terrorism and serious crime by extending the retention of internet communications data is also part of the bill. Now, the last one is perhaps the most controversial, because many will say that this is a snooper's charter. And this is where I say that right now the balance has to be struck in its favour if we are to increase our chances of avoiding another killing like that of Lee Rigby. The bill requires internet service providers, ISPs, like BT, TalkTalk and Virgin, to record certain information about online communications, such as who communicated with whom, where they were when they did so, and when the communication took place. Government agencies have had access to this information for landlines and mobile phones for many years. But in the internet age, they need this information too, because the ability of such data to prove connections and put people in certain places at certain times is crucial to thwart attacks and ensure convictions. Undoubtedly, getting this right is a tricky business, and some people will indeed consider it the thin end of the wedge that has the potential to be abused. But we are in a war, and if the government does not strengthen its hand, it will make things easier for those who want to attack us.
Thank you both. And that finishes our regular features for this week. So we're going to take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. At Christmas, of course, there are plenty of opportunities to go to concerts playing the most beautiful music. And there's the inevitable pantomime. There are loads of those. But just let me remind you that the Christmas market, which runs now till Sunday, December the 21st. The timing of that is Sunday to Wednesday, 10 to 6, Thursday to Saturday, 10 to 7.30. And there are over 80 traditional chalets with gift products. There's the ice rink, and that runs to Sunday, January the 4th. And on Sundays you can meet characters from the Christmas story. Concerts, well, on Friday, December the 19th, a feast of Christmas music at Romsey Abbey at 7:30. They'll be playing Vivaldi's Gloria and carols for choir and audience, and those singers are the Romsey Singers. You can contact musicinromsey.ticketsource.co.uk. That's www.musicinromsey.ticketsource.co.uk, or you can telephone 01794 512 502. 01794 512 502. I think the Christmas spirit has got into us this week. We don't seem to be able to speak straight, but we're doing our best. The next concert is on Saturday, December the 20th. It's called Merrily on High, and it's at St Cross Church, Winchester, 7:30 p.m., performed by Southern Voices. It's a seasonal celebration, including traditional carols for choir and audience. Tickets are £16, with concessions of £14. Children aged 17 and under are £5, and those are from the Winchester Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. And, of course, I mentioned the pantomimes. Well, the Hampshire Chronicle has done a roundup of pantomimes, and they've given most of the details for this local area. Winchester has Sleeping Beauty at the Theatre Royal. That runs until Sunday, January the 4th. And it begins on this coming Saturday. That's tomorrow. That's Winchester, 01962 840 440. That number again, 01962 840 440. Or you can go to theatreroyal.winchester.co.uk. theatreroyal.winchester.co.uk. Southampton is playing Cinderella with none other than Gok One as the fairy Gok Mother. And that runs from Saturday, December the 13th, until Sunday, January the 4th. Tickets range from £15 to £37.50. Go to www.mayflower.org.uk or call 023 8071 1811. And then another local pantomime, The Snow Queen, is at Nuffield Theatre. That runs until Sunday, January the 4th, 2015, and the tickets range from £10 to £22. Again, you can go to the website, nuffieldtheatre.co.uk, or call 023 8067 1771. Another item of news that may interest you is at Mottisfont, and it's headed Festive Cheers coming through loud and clear. A National Trust estate is sending out the traditional Christmas message loud and clear with its winter experience. The Nutcracker-themed festivities are underway. Open every day from 10 to 4pm until January the 4th, excluding Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Mottisfont, near Romsey, tells the Christmas tale around the house and grounds using scenes and puppets. Visitors will go on a trail to the sound of ticking clocks, past the Mouse King and the toy soldiers' battle, to the land of snow and the land of sweets. Families can get even more festive with the chance to meet the Sugar Plum Fairy, and that would be on December the 20th and 21st from 12 p.m. Eyes will light up at the sight of a 14-foot glittering tree in the path of the trail on the estate. National artists and theatre workers, Cabaret Mechanical Theatre, Emerald Ant and Sarah Filmer are part of the on-site production. They have created handcraft lantern theatres and have-a-go life-size puppets around Mottisfont. Visitors can then warm up in festive style with a feast from the seasonal menu, from turkey and Christmas pudding to mince pies and coffee. You can have full details of this from the website www.nationaltrust.org.uk/Mottisfont. And National Trust is all one word, lowercase. Well, and that's it from the What's On section for us this week. And our final regular announcement for you is, of course, the lighting up times. On Saturday, the 13th of December, the sun will set at 4:14 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 17th of November, the sun will rise at 7:14 a.m. with lighting up time at 4:15 p.m. And so, on to items of general news with Gerry starting us off, please.
And the first piece is headed 500,000 OAPs face a lonely Christmas. Almost 500,000 older people face spending Christmas alone, often blaming the pressure families are under, according to a new report. Older people's charity Royal Voluntary Service said the number of over 75s being on their own in the festive period has increased in recent years. A survey of 400 people in the age bracket showed many lived far away from their relatives, while some said they did not want to put their family under more pressure or had simply not been invited to spend Christmas Day with anyone. Nearly half of those polled said they think families are fragmented now and under a lot of pressure with older people easily forgotten. Royal Voluntary Service has teamed up with Community Christmas with the aim that no older person should have to spend Christmas alone. Actress Felicity Kendall, backing the campaign, said, "It's heartbreaking to think of 500,000 older people sitting on their own, hidden away, while the nation enjoys themselves." Caroline Billington, founder of Community Christmas, said, "If you're on your own when you don't want to be at Christmas, it's a really hard day. It only takes a pub open on Christmas Day or a community centre with a lunch on to register it at Community Christmas, to show older people there are other options near them this Christmas. We want it to be a day older people can look forward to and would ask everyone to register their events on the Community Christmas website." David McCullough, Royal Voluntary Service Chief Executive, said, "We know isolation is a huge issue, and this can be acutely felt if you are alone on Christmas Day, missing being with family and friends. There's no better time to reach out and change someone's life."
Train fares to rise by 2.3%. Southwest Trains have announced their lowest increase in fares for the past 5 years. Fares on all services will rise by an average of 2.3% from next month. During last Wednesday's autumn statement, the government confirmed season tickets and other regulated fares nationally will rise by 2.5%. The overall average price increase for all fares across the UK in 2015 will be 2.2%. Tim Shoveller, Chief Executive of the Southwest Trains Network Rail Alliance, said, "Money from fares goes towards running and maintaining the railway, which benefits every household in the country by improving journeys, creating employment, and helping to boost the economy. Over the next 5 years, Network Rail is spending on average £27 million a day building and maintaining a better railway that benefits passengers, communities and businesses across Britain alongside commitments made by train companies to improve services. That will mean more seats, better stations and improved journeys. For every pound spent on fares, 97p goes on track, train, staff and other costs, while 3p goes in profits earned by train companies for running services on Europe's fastest growing railway. The industry is continuing to work together to get more for every pound we invest to enable government to make fares decisions which work best for passengers."
Crackdown on blue badge misuse. Widespread abuse of the blue badges for disabled drivers in Hampshire has been revealed by a county council investigation. Officers found that nearly a third of the badges, which allow for easier parking, were being misused. A crackdown was launched in October to tackle misuse and fraud in disabled parking areas. In operations in Winchester, Eastleigh and Andover, 28 of the 100 badges were confiscated. There are around 70,000 blue badges in Hampshire. Infringements included people using someone else's badge, people using a dead person's badge, and use of expired badges. Those caught received penalty charge notices, had badges confiscated, and got formal warnings. The County Council has revealed it is using new powers to target the fraud. It has also teamed up with Portsmouth City Council's Blue Badge Enforcement Team, as well as working with district and borough councils who have responsibility for parking enforcement. Investigator Stephen Hewitt said the most common excuse was, "I'm picking up stuff for the badge holder." Offenders ranged in age from mid-20s to 70. Investigations with a view to prosecuting four or five offenders under the Theft and Fraud Act are ongoing, said Mr. Hewitt. Serial offenders can save several thousands of pounds a year by avoiding normal charges. Mr. Hewitt of Portsmouth City Council undertook the investigation with a colleague. They patrolled the three towns, checking cars in four-hour stretches. Challenging offenders, Mr. Hewitt said, most tried to lie their way out of trouble, telling convoluted stories. He said offenders were across the age and social spectrum. Roy Perry, council leader, said, "It's shocking to find out the lengths to which some people will go for just a few hours of free parking, including using a deceased person's blue badge. This is a national problem. But as the issuing authority for blue badges in Hampshire, we must ensure that they are being used correctly by people who really need them, and that disabled people are not competing with drivers who might be misusing or abusing the system." Disabled Motoring UK backed the crackdown. Helen Dolphin, Director of Policy and Campaign, said, "I'm delighted to hear that Hampshire is tackling blue badge abuse so successfully. Unfortunately, abuse of this scheme is seen by many as a victimless crime, and many authorities just sweep it under the carpet. However, when you have a disability, which means you can only walk a very short distance, being able to park close to where you need to go is essential."
And the next item is also disability related and headed, "Council made me feel worthless and ignored." A disabled mother says she feels worthless after the City Council told her they had nowhere permanent for her to live. Kaylee Nichols, 29, suffers short-term memory loss, depression, regular migraines, an irregular heartbeat, and difficulty walking following a horse riding accident 2 years ago, which broke her back. She says Winchester City Council has left her homeless and treated her like a dog. She was told she faces living in a hostel for up to a year before being considered for a council property, despite her disability. "I just think it's crazy for anybody, but especially for a family with a four-year-old and a disabled parent," she said. "I don't understand how they think living in a hostel is a possibility." Mrs. Nichols currently lives in Waltham Chase with husband Josh, who left work to care for her and daughter Bella. They rent privately, but are subsidised by the council. They were told they had to leave by November the 20th, so the landlord could renovate and sell the house. "We found a private rented house in Hedge End, but that falls under Eastleigh Borough Council, so everything has to be checked over by them now," she said. "It falls into the lowest rent bracket, so we have to find an extra £80 a month to pay our rent. You can see that they don't care about what they're doing. It made me feel small, worthless, and completely ignored." Mrs. Nichols said she spent most of last week in hospital. "The doctor thought I was having a heart attack and linked that to the housing situation. It's making me more and more ill. Since the accident, I've become a bit of a recluse because I can't go out. It's quite depressing, and I have been diagnosed with depression. The impact it has on my daughter seeing me this ill and injured makes a massive thing. Winchester City Council was unavailable for comment.
New estate offers rare chance to build a school from scratch. Primary will be an academy sponsored by Winchester University. Hampshire education bosses and architects have the rare chance to build a school from scratch. The County Council is drawing up plans for the new primary at Barton Farm, the new estate on the northern edge of Winchester, where work will start soon in the construction of 2,000 homes. The new school, with a maximum capacity of 480 pupils, will be in the heart of the new development close to the public square and shops. Winchester University is sponsoring the new school, which will be an academy free of direct County Council control. The county is, however, building the school, and its senior architect, Bob Woolbridge, presented his initial thoughts to the Barton Farm Forum at the Guildhall last week. The school will be built on relatively flat land to the north of the belt of beech trees that crosses the site. It will be single-storey and made up of classrooms clustered round courtyards. It will be accessible and welcoming, a key tangible asset for the local community. Low energy use would be at the heart of the plans, with solar panels likely to go on the roof and the aim to use good design to minimise water and fuel use. Mr. Woolbridge said the site was a good size, level and the right shape. There is room for future expansion. Initially there will be a two-form entry, so when full we'll have 420 pupils and 14 classrooms. There is the flexibility to have a three-form entry with a potential for 630 pupils and 21 classrooms. More and more Winchester schools are becoming oversubscribed, with most recently Kingsworthy joining the list. County Councillor Martin Todd said, "As an academy, it fixes its own catchment area. They can do what they want. Only Hampshire County Council schools have catchment areas. So potentially the school could attract pupils from a much wider area than Barton Farm and Harestock or Wick." Mr. Woolbridge, strategic manager in the architects department, said county officials have been meeting the university to discuss the plans. The county has an international reputation for its school design, stretching back to when the late Sir Colin Stansfield Smith ran the department from the 1970s to the early 1990s. Mr. Woolbridge was unclear on exactly when the school will open, saying it was always a challenge to get the timing right. Open too early and the school will be empty, and too late and it will be bursting at the seams. The opening date will be decided by the university in conjunction with the County Council. The County Council provided some preliminary plans but declined, for an unspecified reason, to allow the preliminary sketches to be printed, even though they were shown at a public meeting.
And now I'm looking at a photograph of a very, very familiar face on our television screens, and it is Alan Titchmarsh. A TV personality, this article says, has been named Chancellor of Winchester University. Alan Titchmarsh will replace Professor Dame Mary Fagan as Chancellor from August the 1st, 2015. Mr. Titchmarsh was given an MBE for services to horticulture and broadcasting and became Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire in 2001. Mr. Titchmarsh said, "I am delighted to have been asked to become the next Chancellor of the University of Winchester. I have long admired the university's ethos and reputation, and I look forward to a long and happy association. I feel hugely honoured."
Grotesque civic offices may be set for refurb. City chiefs are planning a multi-million pound revamp of Winchester's crumbling civic offices. Leaking roofs, draughty windows and poor heating could damage morale at Winchester City Council if its ageing offices are not refurbished or replaced, a meeting heard. City offices behind the Guildhall in Colebrook Street, was designed to last until the mid-1990s, and the pillars holding it up contain asbestos. New plans to revamp the site could cut carbon emissions and improve working conditions for hundreds of staff, Cabinet heard last week. Refurbishment could cost up to £7 million, with an extra £5 million spent relocating staff during the works. Alternatively, a £6 million plan to build a new block in the Guildhall's West Wing would create space for a car park or commercial property. Councillor Ian Tait branded the current site grotesque. "We're lucky that the Guildhall is as tall a building as it is," he told the meeting, "so that it conceals the city offices from wider public gaze." After the meeting, Chief Executive Simon Eden said, "People are pretty stoic about being in these offices, but if we put people in a good working environment, we can ask more of them. And we ask a lot of people in local government these days." Plans to replace the offices have been touted for over a decade. But veteran councillor Sue Nelms, now sitting as an independent, said the current financial climate meant the scheme could take years, if it happens at all, and the council would have to borrow large sums of money to fund it. She told the Hampshire Chronicle, "The council will have to be in massive debt to do it if things go on the way they are. I'm hoping the massive debts won't occur." Council claims that new offices would boost morale or output. "This is rubbish," she added. "The fact you sit in a lovely modern office does not increase your productivity one iota," she said. "It's staff management, quality of staff and capability of staff that will have remarkable turnover in crummy surroundings. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the interior of the offices at all. It's just that the building is getting to the end of its life." The council has almost halved its office space in the last 10 years and expects to downsize further if it moves to a new building. Extending the Guildhall would save space, as the council is factoring into its plans an expected staff cut of around 10%. Reports on the cost and benefits of both schemes will be presented to Cabinet in mid-2015.
Alex brings light show to his hometown. It is the tight-knit Hampshire community that has supported quadruple amputee Alex Lewis through his darkest days. But on Tuesday night, it was the determined dad who lit up the streets of Stockbridge when he turned on the town's Christmas lights with former Grand Prix driver and BBC Top Gear presenter Tiff Nidell. Hundreds of residents gathered to see the moment when Alex, who is now walking unaided on short artificial limbs, spread some festive cheer before a candle-lit carol service at St Peter's Church. This time last year, Alex, his family and his friends were unsure he would survive beyond Christmas after a common cold left him fighting for his life in hospital. His ordeal resulted in him losing parts of his lips and all four limbs. Alex, who has proposed to fiancée Lucy Townsend and is going through intensive rehabilitation in a bid to walk again, said, "Words cannot describe how grateful I am for the support of the community, so it is an honour for me to turn on the lights. I feel so lucky to be with my family and friends this Christmas."
Former teacher and councillor dies at age of 84. A former city and county councillor and veteran physics teacher at Winchester College has died aged 84. John Ramsay Darling dedicated almost 30 years to the school, teaching physics and physical science from 1955 to 1983 and constructing novel experiments with his lab steward. He also managed the Winchester College Sailing Club with outings on the River Hamble. Mr. Darling balanced teaching in Winchester with years of public service. He represented St. Maurice's Ward on Winchester City Council from 1967 to 1974 and was elected to Hampshire County Council from 1974 to 1983. He served on many council committees, including Education, Planning and Social Services, and represented it on the board of Southampton University and other institutions. The John Darling Mall a senior care home in Eastleigh, is named after him. In his youth, he was active in Scottish dancing, and in Lima he took up salsa. He was a successful actor in many amateur productions and was well read in history. But his abiding interest was sailing, particularly his folk boat. He was good at making strangers feel at home, which is partly why, in 1994, he was hired as a gentleman host on top cruise ships such as the Queen Elizabeth II and Royal Viking Sun. Dressed in a tuxedo, his job was to dance and socialise with passengers. John was born in Barnet, Hertfordshire, on August the 14th, 1930, to John Thomas Darling, a civil servant, and Margaret Ramsay of Scottish ancestry. He attended Queen Elizabeth School, Barnet, and read physics at Wadham College, Oxford, from 1949 to 1952. In 1953, John married Patricia Vickers, who graduated as a nurse from St Thomas's Hospital and published a memoir, An Ordinary Life, in 2011. They raised five children and lived together until 1983. John enjoyed a second marriage to Marisol Compomanes of Peru from 1996 to 2003. After retirement in Yarmouth, Isle of Wight, John focused on his family, including 10 grandchildren.
Leisure Centre proposal dropped. Controversial plans to rebuild River Park Leisure Centre on parts of a city park have been dropped by civic chiefs. The decision to scrap development on parts of North Wall's recreation ground came as the Freedom of Information watchdog revealed it is set to investigate Winchester City Council over requests by a campaigner. Rebuilding River Park on green space was fiercely contested by the Save the Wreck campaign, one of several groups which marched through Winchester last month to protest against the council's alleged lack of consultation on major developments. Options still on the table include refurbishing the centre, building new facilities at Bar End, or rebuilding in phases on the site and nearby skate park. Building a new centre is expected to cost between £26 to £28 million, with an Olympic 50-metre pool adding £1.4 million to the bill. Cabinet last Wednesday heard that the council will not be able to afford this on its own. City bosses are negotiating with groups including Winchester University and Hampshire County Council to secure cash for a new facility. Councillor Ian Tate said replacing River Park could provide Hampshire with an Olympic legacy and urged the County Council to take the baton using its broad financial shoulders. Councillor Kim Gottlieb said refurbishment, likely to be the cheapest option for the City Council, would be inadequate and unambitious. Councillor Simon Cook, speaking at the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday, said refurbishment was the only viable short-term option, but long-term, the future was a new facility at Bar End. Refurbishing the 40-year-old facility would only extend its life by around 15 years. But controversy still surrounds River Park, with campaigners claiming the council has unduly favoured the leisure centre's current partner. Councillor Gottlieb and Rosemary Burns told Cabinet that civic chiefs gave DC Leisure first option to design and build any new centre under a mechanism agreed in 2012-13. Chief Executive Simon Eden rejected the claims, saying any new centre will go out to tender and every council decision has been taken in light of legal advice and value for taxpayers. The Information Commission confirmed it is set to investigate campaigner Martin Wilson's Freedom of Information Act requests to Winchester City Council about various matters relating to River Park Leisure Centre. Mr Wilson has previously accused the council of defrauding the public over its management of the centre since 1992 and has lodged a number of requests under the Freedom of Information Act. Mr Eden told the Chronicle that the council has only withheld certain legal advice and commercially sensitive information about DC Leisure's profit and operating costs.
Students to take over four-star hotel. Dozens of Eastleigh College students are preparing to take over the running of the Holiday Inn in the town for the 2 days next month. The brainchild of the college's hospitality and catering staff, the unique project on January the 9th to the 10th will allow 70 first, second and third year students to experience the pressures, challenges and rewards of working in a four-star hotel. Students are applying for jobs before going through interviews and, once selected, an induction and training programme. Students will fill a variety of roles, including general manager, duty manager, housekeeping manager, head chef, bar assistant and receptionist. Level 3 student Dominic Piotrowski said, "It's a great opportunity to experience firsthand what it's like working in the industry. I am applying for the role of general manager, and this process has made me look at other hotels and what's required for such jobs." Alastair Lawson, the general manager at the Holiday Inn, believes this to be a valuable opportunity for the students. He said this is a unique opportunity for students from Eastleigh College to take over our hotel and experience the way in which our business is run. The students will undergo a rigorous selection process for the positions and appointments, where they will be made to those who can prove that they have the right attitude and ability to deliver the Holiday Inn brand experience. "I do hope that everyone involved will enjoy the opportunity, and if successful, we hope to make this an annual event."
M3 resurfacing brought forward. The resurfacing of the M3 motorway at Winchester has been brought forward again after a nearby primary school lobbied the city's MP. Shepherd's Down School in Compton is next to the busy road, and pupils sometimes find it difficult to hear others talking because of traffic noise. The head teacher asked MP Steve Brine to help speed up the work between junctions 9 and 14, originally set to be carried out in 2020. Several months ago, the Highways Agency responded to the long-running campaign by announcing the resurfacing would be done in the financial years 2015-16 and 2016-17. Now the stretch nearest to Shepherd's Down School will be done before the end of the month, with the rest completed by April. Shepherd's Down head teacher Jane Sansom said she was delighted at the Christmas present. "Noise from the motorway is so difficult for children with autism and hypersensitive hearing, so this is brilliant," she said. "It's going to make a huge difference to us, particularly when the children are outside."
Guy proves he's still a cut above the rest. He may have cut locks for more than 40 years, but Winchester's celebrity stylist is still in fashion after scooping a national award for Hairdresser of the Year. Guy Kramer, who runs a luxury salon in Parchment Street, was crowned British Hairdresser of the Year by the Fellowship for British Hairdressing at a glitzy ceremony last Monday. He said he was shocked and delighted to win for only the second time in his 41-year career. "I never expected to win the biggest award," he said. "I won it for the first time 20 years ago, and there have been two decades of young, talented hairdressers rising through the industry since then. I feel so honoured to have won over such talented competition. It feels reviving and rejuvenating." Presenting the award, Fellowship President Errol Douglas said, "Guy is a French man with a British heritage and international reputation, and his unmistakable style of hairdressing is distinctive, elegant and chic. In the professional arena, his renowned long hair skills and classic techniques with contemporary flair are impressing and inspiring hairdressers around the world." And there is a photograph, interesting photograph, of Mr. Kramer with Errol Douglas, the president of the Fellowship for British Hairdressing. And it has to be said, neither of them seems to have much hair at all.
Thank you very much, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. I need to remind you again that Irene Dowding is the lady to call if you have any problems with your recordings. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And again, thanks to our editors, Gordon and Liz, also to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Many thanks to our readers. This is our final reading for you in 2014, and we'll be with you again on January the 30th in the new year. So meanwhile, it's goodbye from me, Ros, and from Robin.
Goodbye.
And Jerry.
Goodbye.
And we wish you all a very pleasant Christmas and hope that 2015 will bring you all that you hope for. Can you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible and put the address label inside the wallet. Enjoy this season, keep warm, and thank you for listening.